Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster, the post-Black Friday Friday Filibuster. I'm David Johnson, joined by Eric Asperslager.
Hello.
Mac McIntyre.
Hackadoo.
Daryl Loomis.
Hidey-ho.
And you know how this works, so let's dispense with the pleasantries and get right down to brass tacks. Mac, what have you been doing with your bad self?
Let's see. What have I been watching lately? You know, I've been hearing a little bit of word of mouth here and there about this show, Gravity Falls. So I decided to check it out. Some episodes were online. And
nothing about it. You have to brief
nothing
me.
About it?
No,
well,
it's
you know,
a logical title.
Yes. I had 30 minutes to kill, so I'll just watch one of these episodes online. And the show is great. It is so great. I can't believe how good it is. It's an animated series. It's on Disney Channel. Don't let that stop you. And it's just really good. It's very funny. It's really clever. The writing is just super sharp and witty. The set is very simple. It's a pair of twins who go to live with their uncle in this small town. The uncle owns this roadside attraction. It's kind of this crappy tourist spot. Mm-hmm. With where he has all these, like, it's like a museum where he has all these weird oddities on display. And from there, it's just your basic small town where weird things happen show. Those are always very popular. And there's all kinds of crazy mysteries and stuff for the kids to solve.
So I'm not really show basically.
Basically, yeah, but it's got a very sly wit and a little bit of a subversive edginess to it. So,
gotcha.
Definitely the Bullwinkle factor. You can watch it with your kids, and your kids get it on one level, and you get it on another level. But it's just very funny. It's very creative. That some of the directions that the plot lines go are just, you know, completely so bizarre and so off the wall, and yet works within the context of the show that. I'm really enjoying it, and I've just been hunting down every episode I can.
Nice.
Is it one season or?
I think it just started. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Because I've been catching up on episodes online.
Gotcha.
All right. Oh, so a little gem that you stumbled across.
Yeah, totally.
Nice. Anything else to report? Are you still basking in the heavenly glow that Stan Lee autographed?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm gonna get that framed pretty soon, probably in the next week or two.
It's gonna get bent if you don't.
I know. Yeah. I'm gonna have to take it out of the plastic.
Lord, no! Please don't do that.
Yeah, because that's gem mint 10, right?
That's right.
All right. Nothing else.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
All right, Eric.
Let's see. I'm part of the Black Friday madness.
Yes.
I picked up Brave on Blu-ray for $9.
Had you seen that before?
I had not. No, I hadn't seen it. I'd heard mixed things, and so I just never got around to it. But I figured Pixar, I'll give it a shot, especially for a good price.
Yeah, and.
I really liked it. I thought it got kind of a bad rap.
Now let me ask you. I mean, is it like the thing I heard was that it was predictable? You know, like
yeah,
predictable. I mean, I don't know. Like, if I saw the trailer, am I going to be able to kind of, you know, speculate what it's about using the tropes that have been used before in movies, or do they throw you some surprises that Pixar usually does?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's at least one big development that I think they kept out of their marketing. On purpose,
mm-hmm.
that you may know about by now, for all I know. I think it does stick to a pretty tried and true, you know, storytelling tradition, but I don't think that that's, you know, to the film's, you know, discredit. I think, if anything, it feels maybe a bit kind of small in scope and maybe even a little slight compared to some mm-hmm. other Pixar movies. But I think that, you know, you look at kind of Pixar's recent track record, and, you know, whatever you think of the movies, this is like their first original non-sequel movie in years. You know, you had Toy Story 3, which was very good, and then you had Cars 2, which did not do very well, and then Brave, and then next is a Monsters Incorporated sequel, you know, along with 3D re-releases of Little Nemo, Finding Nemo, and
which would be
great. So I think they certainly deserve, you know, a pat on the back for doing something brand new. I thought that it's the first of all, it looks amazing on Blu-ray. I mean, it's, you know, that kind of, they get better each time because the technology gets better. And, you know, on Blu-ray, it's just spectacular. And I thought they did some interesting things with the way they told the story, and without being specific, because it would give away some of that twist. There is a point in the story where one of the characters is unable to communicate using words, and they do a magnificent job of kind of animating body language so you know exactly what's going on. I was really impressed by that. I think it's totally worth watching. I think it's it kind of got piled on over the summer. Mm-hmm. You know, after having seen Wreck-It Ralph, for instance, I think it's at least as good as that. And
I think,
you know,
there's any kind of like counter Pixar, you know, just the usual like dump on the really popular, successful, well-known company. Was there any of that, you think?
Well, I think so.
You know what I mean? Just that kind of basic contrarian take.
I don't want to, you know, accuse anybody of, you know.
No, you accuse.
Accuse them.
Point your finger.
J'accuse.
I will say that there does always seem to be an accepted narrative for any kind of, you know, when any group of journalists or critics get, you know, talk about a news story or a film or a company or whatever. And I think currently right now, the story of Pixar is that it is on the downslide. And there are probably people who are, you know, kind of gleefully, you know, piling on. I think this, people were maybe underwhelmed and maybe wanted to be wowed after Cars 2.
Yeah.
Disappointed and maybe weren't, but I still think that it's not their best movie, but it's still a worthy movie, so I liked it.
All right, nice.
See, other than that, a couple quick TV shows that I'm catching up. When I started catching up with again online after about a year, there's a BBC show called Being Human.
The roommates, right? Like the ghost vampire or something.
Yeah. Essentially, it's a story about a werewolf, a vampire, and a ghost who live together.
Yeah.
Which sounds super easy, but
they play it straight. Yeah,
and it's actually a very kind of heavy, gory show.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
That's good.
A really strong mythology, and I really enjoyed the first three seasons. Which were available on Netflix up through last year, and then that was it. And the fourth season just became available. I think that's as much as they've actually made. I think there is a fifth series planned for the UK in 2013. But so everything that's out to now is out, and the fourth series was just added. So I watched the first episode today, and it reminded me of how good the show is, and just how kind of crazy they've. The crazy places they've taken the story. I think there's a lot going on right now in the werewolf and vampire department.
There is a lot. That's what rumor has it. Yeah,
I think it's good to remind people that there is actually at least one property that handles that well. And I'm not really a big vampire or werewolf guy either, but I really do love this show. It's interesting to watch this fourth season because kind of like with this last sort of kind of resets in a lot of ways, without giving anything away. It's a real kind of not quite a right term for the show, but it definitely takes a step back from where the last season ended and kind of is trying to kind of, I guess, go a different direction, which is fine. I think that they have every chance to do that. It's just, you know, when it's not a direct continuation of the story that came before, it can be a little disconcerting. Again, kind of like with Fringe. This last season, but I'm enjoying it so far. I think people should definitely check it out. Yes. And then one last thing, a show that I'd heard about online, much like Mac, and I finally checked out a show called Key and Peele, which is a Comedy Central sketch comedy show. Two comedians, their names are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. Apparently they're both on Mad TV, which I was never very impressed
really?
With. But,
yeah, I was never big on Mad TV.
Me neither, yeah.
The shows that I've seen some episodes of that show, and it's got its moments.
I like it. I like it. I mean, I've seen like the first six episodes. Oh, wait, Mad TV or Key and Peele?
Key and Peele.
Yeah, I watched the first six episodes. I thought it was really great. I think it's kind of is you know, maybe not. I'm not responding quite as strong as that to something like Human Giant, but it's kind of in that same wheelhouse. I think that their ideas are very funny.
I think the two. Only having two real lead actors on it hinders them a little bit. So we wind you wind up getting the same characters in multiple situations, not specifically the same characters, but the same performances in different situations.
It's more comparable than to something like that Mitchell and Webb look. I don't know if you've ever seen that show.
Yeah, it's way better than the Mitchell and Webb look for sure.
You don't like Mitchell and Webb?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot.
If you like Mitchell and Webb, you might like the show, because I do, and I like the show.
Nice. I like it.
You know that he's wrong, and you can know that the show's pretty good. So.
Oh. That's okay.
Yeah.
I just don't care for it that much. But no, I think Key and Peele do a little bit better of a job. I just think that having two people as opposed to six or seven limits the number of characters and the number of styles of performances they can do if they're doing sketch comedy.
That's fair. I'll ask you this as an aside. Have you ever seen Peep Show?
I have not.
That's a Mitchell and Webb's, I guess, not quite sitcom. It's sort of like a, I don't know, it's kind of like an awkward Curb Your Enthusiasm style type show where it's all kind of shot from a first person perspective, depending on the character. It's actually a really great show. It's on Netflix. You should check it out.
I'll check it out.
That's what I've been doing.
All right. Good. I covered a lot of ground. I just got old news to relate. Actually, before I go, Daryl, I'll let you step in.
Yeah, I was going to get forgotten here. And
yeah, you were.
Even though I don't have a whole heck of a
I was dozing off. I started talking about this British sketch comedy. I started losing.
Heck of a lot to report, but I did over the last few days. It was about a week ago that I realized that, or that I saw that Freaks and Geeks was available on Netflix on demand. So I started rewatching that, and I find it amazing how similar it is to his movies, even up to today. It's a good show.
By he, you mean Judd Apatow?
Yeah, Judd Apatow. It's a good show. In fact, it's a great show for a guy who's really doing his first thing. And it's kind of amazing that all of the people who were involved in the show wound up with jobs elsewhere after an 18-episode, something like that, 18-episode season.
My question was always, how much was Judd Apatow involved in it? Very much.
Given the style?
Because isn't it a lot of Paul
Feig?
Feig, right? I mean, he created it, right? And it's based on his life. So I'm just wondering, I know Apatow executive produced. I'm just wondering how, and he wrote, didn't he write a lot of the introductions and special edition or something? So I'm just...
Yeah, there's a lot
I just always wondered how into it he, how, was he given like, deep into this?
Given the way that movies like 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up work, it seems to me that he had a big influence on how Freaks and Geeks worked as an episode show. The moralisms there, the use of pop music there, which, frankly, his use of pop music is masterful. He knows how to throw in a pop song and make it meaningful, even if you hate it, like Come Sail Away by Styx. Even if I hate that song, but when he uses that in the pilot episode, it works perfectly well. And he really knows how to do that stuff. And it's amazing to me that his style, you know, has translated into the movies. And I never watched Undeclared. I've never seen an episode of it, so I don't know anything about that. But his movies, which are mixed, decidedly mixed, sort of retain that style, and I will see how I've watched two or three episodes, so I don't know how I'm going to react, you know, after 18 episodes. But right now, I'm really interested in how he's able to put all that stuff together and how similar it is to his movie style.
I still can't get over the Dungeons and Dragons episode at the end. It's one of my all time favorite episodes.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's just great. I just love it so much.
The thing is, maybe more than any of Judd Apatow's movies, I think of it as having such a some real kind of gut punch dramatic moments, and not even just like, oh, it's a big twist or something. It's just that it just feels so real, so raw. There's one, I think my favorite moment in the entire series is like a moment. I think it's the episode where Martin Starr's character Bill's mom is dating the gym teacher.
Biff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He comes up to school, he makes himself a giant snack, and he's watching, is it Gary Shandling? I forget
Gary
who it was.
Gary Shandling, yeah.
And it's all, you know, there's no work. He's just so himself and laughing at it. It's a moment that I recognize. And, like that kind of, I don't know, those kind of like real emotional moments that aren't manipulative, I think are some of the best of the show.
Yeah, I think that's good. And they're not like you said, they're not huge. They're not like big plot twists. So it's not like 21 Jump Street where he's dating a Satanist or something like that. You know,
no.
those kinds of issues. But you're right. It's like that finds its magic in the simple things, like whether
yeah,
it's
slice
kind
of life,
like yeah, whether it's like a simple conversation between Lindsay, you know, and her dad. You know, those kinds of things are
who's really funny. Her
really,
dad's
yeah.
really funny.
Absolutely.
Whatever his name is.
Absolutely. I mean, it's. Yeah, so yeah, and that's something long overdue. I need to buy one of these days, so.
The weird thing is, watching it now as opposed to 1999 or whatever it was, is that it's Linda Cardellini and Seth Rogen and Jason Segel and James Franco who have all made themselves relatively large stars. So it's kind of hard to watch. You're watching these actors do this thing. And I know what the whole thing is, but given the, what happens after Freaks and Geeks get canceled, it makes it, especially with James Franco, it makes it all kind of weird. Not that the performance isn't good or anything like that. It's just that, at this point, 10, 12 years later, I'm used to seeing them doing other things. And just to see them all as kids is kind of strange.
Yeah. Yeah, Segel, obviously Jason Segel, you know, yeah. All those guys.
Yeah, it's strange. It's just strange. James Franco, especially, given that he's everywhere, or at least a year ago was everywhere. It's all kind of strange. But he does look as stoned as he does today, so
yes.
Nothing's really changed that much.
That's true. Nice. Well, I appreciate you taking us on that little trip back. I mean, always good to talk Freaks and Geeks, for sure. For me, I would say that this past week I was doing a little Eric Astroslayer cosplay. Because I took advantage of Black Friday stuff, and I pretty much loaded up on Eric Astroslager approved items. I got seasons 2 and 3 of Community for $10 each.
When I saw your notice of that, I took advantage of that myself.
Oh, yeah.
I had to keep up with the Johnsons.
There you go. And then, yeah, and similarly, got the first two seasons of Breaking Bad on Blu-ray, no less, for like $15 total. I mean, some
total?
Crazy, yeah, total, some kind of craziness. That's why I had them for dirt cheap. So, yeah, I think
you're gonna regret.
I should watch an episode of Breaking Bad to start with, and then see how I feel about it.
Yeah, I know what you said. Yeah, I know what you're gonna say, Eric. I'm gonna regret not getting 3 and 4, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna say.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll have to pay that piper later. So, but
there's another Black Friday coming in like 360 days.
Keep my eyes open. So, yeah, but maybe that'll go on the Amazon wish list. We'll see. But yeah, so very excited to add that stuff to the collection for sure. So, and I just kind of lost track of all this stuff. I've been Black Friday. Cursed. I got the new Resident Evil game, which I've heard very poor things about, but. I'm kind of a sucker for those games, and I got it for $25, so brand new.
What was it?
Which is a great deal. Resident Evil 6. So
how is it?
I haven't played it yet. In fact, when I get off, when I'm done with you stiffs, I'm going to try to give it a spin. So let's keep this party moving. So, okay, so how about lightning round stuff we've got coming for the site? Mac?
Yep, just finished up my review of Men in Black 3 on Blu-ray.
Oh. And?
You know what? Honestly, I really liked it. I wasn't expecting a whole lot, people said it was a cash grab. It came and went from theaters real quick during the summer, but I put it in the Blu-ray player, and I had a lot of fun with it. It was really enjoyable. You know, the premise here is that Will Smith's character, Agent J, goes back in time to 1969, meets a younger version of Tommy Lee Jones' character, Agent K. And,
is Tommy Lee Jones essentially like a cameo in this movie?
He's at the beginning of the end. They give him quite a bit to do. So it's not like Lois Lane in Superman 3, where she's just, you know, barely in it. So yeah, he gets a pretty sizable part. And Josh Brolin is really amazing. Does like this spot on, just perfect impersonation of Tommy Lee Jones.
I wonder if Tommy Lee Jones has ever been compared to Margot Kidder before.
I don't know.
But I think the comparison is apt as far as what you're going for. So.
But yeah, and you know, the humor, because you know, the comedy in the first Men in Black came from Will Smith basically just reacting to this crazy new world that he found himself in. And so the time travel conceit lets them do that again. Because by this point, he's an expert in aliens and sci-fi stuff. But going back to 1969, you know, now he's got a whole new crazy world to react to.
Yes, All right.
So they really, it's very funny, and they keep the jokes coming fast. So.
All right, so exceeded your expectations.
It did, yeah. I hope this doesn't turn into one of those cases where it's a movie that I like and everyone else hates, because it was really a lot of fun.
All right. Eric?
I'm reviewing volume 25 of Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, nice.
What are they doing?
It's four movies, a couple of Universal movies, which I think is kind of a big deal. They got their rights. Although, I mean, they're not they showed up on my, 25 disc set.
Most clearly.
We got from the first season, Robot Holocaust. Then we've got the two Universal movies are Kitten with a Whip, which is an Anne Margaret.
Oh, I love Kitten with a Whip.
Revenge of the Creature, which is a sequel to Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, nice.
Which also happens to be the show's very first episode on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, I remember it well.
Got some historical significance. And the last one is, I'm going from memory, I'm blank. Oh, they changed the name of it, I think, because of rights. The movie itself is called Operation 007. They had to change it to Operation Kid Brother, I guess, because of James Bond copyright stuff. But it's actually a movie starring Sean Connery's brother, Neil. It is a slightly worse than, you know, slightly sub-Roger Moore level James Bond movie. With Bill Connery as a plastic surgeon who can hypnotize people, who looks enough like another unnamed secret spy that he's brought on board to take down this, you know, typical supervillain. It's a weird movie. It's a pretty funny episode though. So it's a good set. I think they got some good movies. So if you like Mystery Science Theater, pick it up next week.
Is it Neil Connery?
Neil Connery, yeah, I think that's right.
I've always wondered why low-budget filmmakers didn't, like, cast siblings of really famous, you know.
That's the whole career of Frank Stallone.
That's true. Frank Stallone, I mean, but, like, that's it, though, right? I mean, and Ron Howard's brother, Clint, you know, obviously, but that's – but I'm talking about, like, hey, it's Todd Pitt.
Well, I really hope this movie
is the brother's fault. Not trying to cash in.
That's right.
I just really hope this movie has a scene where Neil Connery meets Joe Estevez. That would be the Mystery Science Theater ultimate experience.
I mean, Joe Estevez is the unsung hero of the Estevez/Sheen family.
Exactly.
I mean, think about it. You got the DVDs, though, that say from a writer of Scary Movie 2, right? Or from the producer. Why not just say, you know, from the brother of Brad Pitt. Or,
might as well.
From the gene pool of Steven Spielberg. His nephew. Yeah, whatever. Okay.
And still, Kitten with a Whip is one of the great titles. Regardless of the movie itself, it is a great title.
And a great YouTube video, too, by the way.
Yeah, fair enough.
Nice. All right. Daryl.
Not a ton. Have you guys heard of butter sculpturing?
Butter sculpturing? No.
Yeah, as a thing.
I have not.
I've heard of the movie you're leading up to, though.
Yeah, I see it in front of me on the DVD upcoming release. Is that what you're...
Yeah, apparently it's a thing. I was exposed to it for the first time about 3 weeks ago, when I saw an image of Barack Obama carved in butter. And then
that's what turned the tides in Ohio.
Exactly. That's apparently the case. Because yeah, then the following week I saw a movie called Butter with Jennifer Garner and Alicia Silverstone and Rob Corddry on our review list, and couldn't pass it up. And you know what? Well, if you read reviews online of this movie, it's going to look terrible. People apparently hate it. I did not hate it. I actually thought it was funny as hell. It's a medium dark comedy, sort of a gray comedy, I guess you could say. It's well made, and with good performances from Jennifer Garner, and especially from Olivia Wilde, who plays a stripper, with three or four of the funniest lines that I've heard this year. She's really funny. As far as the whole movie, the movie as a whole, meh, you know, it's pretty much what you expect. Olivia Wilde's funny. Jennifer Garner works really well, and I recommend it. Even though everybody seems to think it's awful.
All right. Well, there you go. Like, you know, Max sticking up for Men in Black 3. You're sticking up for Butter. Very good.
And it's called Butter. Who doesn't want to watch a movie called Butter?
That's right. Let's see. For me, well, the biggie, of course, would be The Dark Knight Rises, which I'm hacking away at right now. But I also submitted a fine film called Outpost Black Sun. Actually, it wasn't a fine film. It was pretty mediocre, which is a shame because it's a Scottish movie about undead, indestructible Nazi zombies.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, well, you would think so. And I was genuinely looking forward to watching it, but A, it suffers from Alien vs. Predator Requiemitis, which means the whole movie is almost impossible to watch because it's so dark. You know, it all happens in a bunker in the middle of the night, and it's so dark. So the only time it lights up is at the end, and spoiler alert, a whole bunch of Nazi zombies get blasted by some magical lightning, and holy cow, it looks like the last scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, like rows of Nazis getting blasted in the face with lightning, and they fall to their knees. It's pretty, yeah, it's definitely evocative of that. So, but the worst part, it was just kind of dull, just kind of boring. I don't know. So unfortunate. So that might be out soon, and I would guess the Dark Knight review is going to be up around the time it get releases on Tuesday, which is a good segue, Mac.
Sure thing. Let's take a look at what's coming out next Tuesday on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, hit the DVD releases tab, and there we're going to scroll down and click on the link for the cover art gallery for December 4th. And yep, there's Dark Knight Rises on a bunch of different releases.
Well, and a whole bunch of Cagney and Lacey as well.
It is big time.
a lot of Cagney and Lacey.
I'm real big on the Blu-ray Criterion of Brazil.
Oh, yes. One of my favorite movies.
I know exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be a two-disc set of the previous three-disc set. But hopefully it's restored properly, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Very nice here. At the very top of the list, I didn't even see it the first time. The Adventures of Mark Twain is coming out on Blu-ray, apparently in the States.
Oh, is that the old claymation?
One of my favorite movies ever from when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's a crazy movie.
I assume. I have not seen it since I was a kid, but I will sing its praises. A movie that I heard lots of good things about but haven't seen yet, Beasts of the Southern Wild. It's supposed to be very good.
Supposedly, yes, but I never saw why.
Oh, I will give you a last minute what I watched recently. Watched finally caught Moonrise Kingdom. You know, watched the screener, and I was very impressed. I really liked it. So
yeah, I like that one too.
Fun, you know, certainly one of my a Wes Anderson movie I really liked. So that's it.
Like we've got VHS, which I've talked about previously hating.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
It's a real mess of a movie.
Man, I remember that too. The advanced word of mouth was supposed to be like,
it was so positive.
Yeah,
the trailer was awesome.
This is the scariest thing you'll ever see. Yeah, and like, and there was like serious talent behind the anthology, but
it's serious talent behind it. But it's there's two decent segments, and an hour of garbage.
Yes, exactly.
And it's just ultimately so disappointing. So disappointing. It's just garbage. It's not garbage. I shouldn't say that. But it's so disappointing that it feels like garbage.
So noisy and obnoxious and just...
A bear with a GoPro? A guy in a bear suit with a GoPro walking around. Why is this person filming his Halloween special? None of this makes sense. It's just so disappointing.
Why don't you perk up with the spiritual successor to Spartacus: Blood and Sand, Titanic: Blood and Steel?
Oh, I'll take that any day over VHS.
we have the Simpsons, which is the 15th season.
The 15th. Yeah. Is that what Otto is advertising?
Yes.
Okay.
I love how he does the devil horns, but with just one finger in the middle.
Yes. There's that Halo series, the live action series, Ford unto Dawn. Eric, actually, I was wondering if you requested that to review.
It's on my list.
Okay, yeah, I figured you have been playing some Halo 4, so
I'd be eager
to hear what you think of this, because it's...
That's live action?
Yeah, live action.
Huh.
Kind of an ambitious little mint web series that Microsoft went with, and I think it totals to almost like feature length, right?
It said it says 90 minutes.
Yeah, huh. So I've heard actually pretty good things about it. So if you get it, I'd be interested to hear what your take is.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Elfman was not available to request.
there's Mystery Science Theater we just talked about.
Yep, it's coming out.
There's the forgotten David Cronenberg movie, Existenz.
I watched that. I can't remember anything except that. Wasn't it like... It was stuff attached to the back of people's back or neck.
Yeah, it's a video game that's plugged directly into your spine. It's a good movie. It's a very good movie. Stars Jude Law and Jennifer Jason Leigh. When I saw it in the theater many, many years ago, and this is the last time I saw it, I drove home looking out the window at people, feeling paranoid. It made me as paranoid as I've felt in a movie in a long, long time, and can't wait to see it again. There's a Donna Reed show for anybody who's over 70, or anybody who wants to be over 70.
Season 5.
Someday.
Got to pick up seasons 1 through 4 first to get caught up on all the complex continuity.
All right, I'm gonna call it, and we'll go inadvertently see this on a D-release of the week, Mac.
Let's see. How about Wild Horse Wild Ride?
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Eric?
Eastbound and Down.
Good. Daryl?
All right, I got to decide really fast which I want to do. I think I'm going to do this one. We're going with Pit Bulls in a Skirt.
That's good.
That's a good one.
I'll just go with Up. Yeah, why not?
Simple to the point.
Absolutely. Monosyllabic. Not enough monosyllabic adult films out there, I see.
The other one I had, just for the sake of argument, was Body Blast.
That's
nice.
Gross. Okay, Amber's topic time, you know how this works. I will kick it off. Gentlemen, your topic is limbs that are bending the wrong way, either by force or by the limbs are made to bend the wrong way.
Wait, repeat that, I'm sorry?
Limbs that are bending the wrong way.
Limbs, okay.
Limbs, yes. Either by an external force or on their own merit.
Gotcha. Well, I am going to go, it might be obvious, but I'm going to go with the scene that was in The Exorcist that was released in the re-release of Linda Blair in the crab walk scene. in The Exorcist.
Right, she's like crawling down the stairs backwards.
Yeah, she crawls down the stairs backwards with all of her limbs pulled behind her. And is pretty damn scary.
Yeah, it's bad stuff. Nightmarish.
They made an action figure of that.
Did they?
Yeah.
Now, I would own that action figure if I knew I would know that.
I just know there's examples of this from throughout Steven Seagal's filmography.
That's a good one. You're right.
Oh yeah, yeah, lots of them. And Van Damme.
Yeah. Well, Seagal definitely broke a lot of them. So, like Under Siege 2, he did a lot.
I was trying to remember the first Under Siege. There's the big fight scene in the kitchen, where he's fighting like five guys at once. And
yeah,
I'm pretty sure somebody's arm gets bent the wrong way in that scene.
Yeah, that's vintage Seagal. Yeah. Yeah,
there's also that's the one where the guy swings the knife at Seagal and he leans back really far. Although I think he might do that in all of his movies.
You're correct. He does do that in all his movies, yes. Those are his two moves, by the way, leaning back really far or pushing people into objects.
Yes. and he does a thing where it's kind of a combination between a hit and a slap.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
But, yeah, I'm pretty sure he grabs a guy, like, by the wrist and then bends his whole arm in a way that looks just unbelievably painful.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
That's Seagal's Aikido.
There it is.
All right, it took me a while to actually track the title of this movie down because I couldn't remember. A movie called The Arrival.
Damn you!
Sorry. Sorry, Dave. Sorry, yes.
A little kid at the end, fantastic.
Yeah, as his legs flip around backwards like he's an ostrich and he runs away.
I don't remember anything else about that.
Me neither. I actually sat through it in the theater and I can't remember anything else.
They made a sequel to that terrible. Too. They made The Arrival.
Oh, did they?
They made a sequel to it, so.
It's actually called Arrival 2, The Second Arrival. Oh, that's crazy.
That's fantastic. That is a cheap sequel right there.
I have to go with my backup, which is actually my backup was Seagal, so my third backup will just have to be at the end of the movie. Tom Young-goon, also known as the Protector, and I'm sure I butchered the name of that, but that's Tony Jaa's follow-up to Ong Bak, which is, like, objectively speaking, is a terrible movie that makes zero sense, but it's populated with some fantastic action scenes, and the culmination of which is it's Jaa versus. Just like an unending stream of bad guys, like that movie, like that game Kung Fu for the Nintendo, right? Where these guys just kind of run straight at the bad guy and like dry hump him if he gets hold of him. These guys just come running at Tony Jaa, and it's literally just 15 minutes of sustained bone breaking, you know, just legs and arms, everything. I mean, just punctuated by one scene where he grabs some guy's leg, catches his kick. Flips him around and then does this jumping atomic drop with his knee facing the wrong way and just totally accordions it. So, I mean, a movie where the chapter skip button was made for, you know, just like there's nothing in there. There's nothing between the fight scenes that needs to be viewed by anybody. So,
the other one that I had is that I want to mention just because we'd already talked about. David Cronenberg and Existenz is the scene in The Fly where Jeff Goldblum breaks the guy's arm wrestling.
Oh yeah,
and just totally pops his wrist out.
Oh, that's messed up
because he's so fly strong.
He's fly strong.
Has cracked me up since I was a kid.
Although apparently it's also quite the aphrodisiac. Who knew?
Oh, yeah. No, it gets Gina Davis hot as hell.
All right. Well, on that note, Daryl, why don't you go next?
All right. We're going to go with, speaking of that, when you watch it again, I guess, bad special effects in a movie that you really like.
Good one. See, I did have some ideas for Superman 2. But I've just realized that movie kind of stinks. I'm going to go with Superman 2.
Yeah. You might have to take some concessions on what you really
okay,
like.
I'll go with,
or
yeah.
How about movies you kind of like, at least?
Well, okay, I'll go with Superman 2, just because it's one of my favorite scenes. So, during the whole, you know, Royal Rumble in the streets there, right, between Zod and the boys and Superman, you remember when Zod and they start using a super breath, right, to blow people all over the place.
Right.
Well, if you just really take some time to look at the scenes where the cars are getting blown everywhere, and just look at, like, because it's obviously these are models, but you look at the people, and they're like, they're honestly paper doll cutouts.
Yeah.
Being pulled on strings. It's, I mean, that was just a production that, wagered their entire hand, the entire bank, and that you would just be looking at the cars, not looking at the people, because it's like zero effort. I mean, it's laughable. Like, why are they even in there? I mean, little puppets being pulled on strings.
Yeah, they could just have left the people out.
Leave them out.
Just on the cars.
Leave them out.
Not let you look at it. And now that these things are coming out in high definition.
Oh, like, it's even worse.
Worse and worse.
I would encourage anybody just to fire that up on Netflix or whatever and just enjoy that, because it's like stuff I just made for my science fair projects, you know? That was a level of quality.
I'll go with a movie that has a few rough special effects in general, but there's an even kind of really bad one at the end. Nightmare on Elm Street, the original, ends a woman being pulled through a small door window, and it's just a dummy. It's one shot backwards. And I know they did it like very quickly at the very end from a studio note, but at the same time, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It was.
It's a horrible effect.
I got a couple in mind here. A somewhat notorious one. Some people debate over whether or not this was intentional, but at the very beginning of Casino, with Robert De Niro, De Niro goes walking outside, he gets into his car and turns the key and the car blows up. And there is a cut just before the car blows up to De Niro in the car, right to a dummy in the car. And it's just ridiculously obvious that it's a dummy.
And yeah, sounds like one of those frame by frame things that you can find on DVD that just make everything look terrible.
Yeah, probably, yeah. But it's just like, it's such an obvious cut. It's like, he must have gotten out of the car, they put the dummy in, and then they started filming again. But during that time, like, the light shifted so you could tell that it was different. It was just, it's so blatantly obvious. But then this has the fans saying, oh, well, it's intentionally obvious because Martin Scorsese is a genius.
Because they're justifying the horribleness of it.
Right. So, I don't know. But, yeah, next time you watch Casino, look for that. It's pretty easy to spot.
Well, this is a little honorable mention. And I can't remember. The movie's not called Above the Law, but it's something like it. It's not the Seagal movie. It's a movie I reviewed a ways while ago. It was a Hong Kong actioner starring Cynthia Rothrock.
Right? Oh, yeah. Beyond the Law? Is it Beyond the Law?
Yeah, it's close. It's something like that. You're close. But I mean, it's not a special effect, but there are fight scenes that she takes part in where it is obvious. And if you slow it down, it is brutally obvious that she's being doubled by the main character in drag.
Yeah. It's too bad because Cynthia Rothrock was a real, like,
and she's a legit martial artist. So it is like offensive on many levels, but just like, right, cause it sells her short because she's legit. She is like, you know, she is a legit badass. So yeah.
No, I loved her movies when I was younger. But that's sad to hear.
Yeah. So
not surprising to hear, but sad to hear.
It was Outside the Law? Is that
no, it actually was called Above the Law. Above the Law.
Above the Law?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's from 1986. I was looking at my review here. I wish I put a screen cap in, but I didn't. That was great.
All right. Mine comes from my absolutely, bar none, favorite horror movie, Suspiria. It's a beautiful movie. It's nasty and violent and everything I want about a horror movie is in it. But there's this bit where a piano player for the ballet school that the whole movie takes place around winds up getting eaten by his seeing eye dog. He's blind. So he gets eaten by a seeing eye dog, which is a concept I wholeheartedly condone. This is great. This is exactly what I want. And as the transfers have gotten better over the years, it's become more and more obvious that it is a dog head in a hand puppet. And so today, when you watch it, it is very clearly a man with his hand in a terrible puppet, shaking it wildly, and then it switches over to a dog eating some sausage or something.
Okay.
And it's really disappointing. It really hinders how much I love that movie because, you know, in 1994, whenever I first saw that movie, when everything was distorted and poor looking, that it all looked pretty natural. But every time I see it, it becomes more and more obvious that it's just some dude with his hand in a dog head, shaking it wildly. And then a cut to a dog, and it's horrid. It's horrid. It's as bad as anything in Italian cinema. Which, if any of you,
have yeah, say it a lot.
It's a big statement you're making.
Horrid.
Nice. All right, Eric.
Short and sweet. Scars. And Dave, this is your chance to take mine. So
okay. just because it's timely and it's what I'm kind of been reviewing this week, The Joker from The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. Probably some of the most important narrative scars ever filmed.
In the original, the 90s Batman, Joker wasn't scarred. It was just paint, right?
In the Tim Burton one?
I think it was plastic surgery, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No, he had his mouth was bent so it looked like he had a permanent smile.
Right. But
I think it was bad
plastic
surgery.
Bad plastic surgery. Like his face got melted and there was bad plastic.
Gotcha. That's right. Gotcha.
We'll count that anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's not my choice. I was just curious. my choice, speaking, because I've been riffing on David Cronenberg all day, is Crash, where it's all
Holly Hunter, James Spader movie.
It's all scar fetish. There's not a single scene to mention. It's all scar fetish.
Fun
movie. I guess the first one that comes to mind, I've been watching Arrow on the CW. And there's a whole bit where every time he takes his shirt off, which is a lot on the show, he's all covered with scars because he had been stranded on the deserted island for all these years, and now he's home again. And they're doing like a Lost thing where they have flashbacks to the island, and I guess the writers have come up with a story for each one of his scars. And so we're getting, in each episode, we learn where each scar came from.
That sounds like a long, drawn out bunch of pointlessness.
It could be.
All right. Well, I guess all the Batman talk, I could have gone with Victor Zsasz, but yeah. I'll go with what inspired it for me. I recently watched when I was watching, you know, around the time I watched E.T. on Blu-ray, I watched Jaws on Blu-ray for the first time, and that's again another spectacular transfer. And that great scene on the boat when they're all comparing their scars. And how they got them and the various shark bites and broken hearts and everything that leads into Robichaud's, great Indianapolis speech. So that whole scene.
Very good. All right. Take us away, Mac.
Okay. My topic's a little bit similar to Daryl's there. A little bit. It's outdoor scenes that were obviously filmed indoors.
Boy, MASH ended up doing that a lot through the end of the run. I just remember, back in the day, it was doing a lot of location shooting, but the 4077 was shooting someone's garage. So I go with someone. I mean, they would occasionally cut from a location shoot to the camp, and it was pretty rough. I'm going to give another one. Hopefully this doesn't, but Full House was the master at this. Full House film. I mean, maybe they just did. They did like a lot of, you know, they were out of their house a lot, ironically enough. But I mean, one of my favorites was in was when Danny overheard the family bitching about his anal retentive cleaning habits. So he decided to take a donkey for a ride up into the mountains.
As you do.
And as you would, as one would want to do in that situation, and clear his head. And, like, it's pretty much Bob Saget, you know, by himself in these scenes, talking to a donkey and getting in touch with his inner feelings. But it's outside with a donkey, but it's obviously inside. You know, there's like a matte painting in back, and there's plastic shrubbery.
Anybody who can discuss Full House, it's you.
Ah, thank you. I appreciate it. Best thing anyone's ever said to me. So, yeah, I'm going to have that be my official answer. Danny and a donkey in an indoor set.
You'll put that on your tombstone. I knew Full House. I am going to go, speaking of some of our recent James Bond talk, I'm going to go with The World Is Not Enough, which has some of the most obvious for modern movies. You know, there's a certain level in older movies where you expect stuff on sound stages. But The World Is Not Enough had some of the most obvious soundstage outdoor footage that I've ever seen. It was like there's a scene in it where there's these little fires around on little things, and there's no question that they're Bunsen burners or whatever you call them, the little cans of canned heat. And just awful, awful, obvious fake plastic trees and fake plastic walls. Just awfulness. It's just awful.
I'm gonna go with one that you cannot really fault the movie for. I think it works quite well. But in The Wizard of Oz, you know, most of it was shot on a soundstage, and there were obviously many shots with big elaborate paintings in the background and the yellow brick road going off in the distance, and it works well. In that case, at that time, you know, good on them, I say. That's it. Did that come through?
It does.
You hear me?
I gotcha.
All right, I don't know. I know my mic is cutting out, so.
Yeah,
right.
No, you're good, actually. So.
Just didn't know if there was a but after that.
There's no but. That's a good movie. I'm going to go out on a limb. Mac has Men in Black 3. You have Butter. I'm going to take a firm stance on Wizard of Oz being a good movie.
Fair enough.
It's good.
Fair enough.
There's a triple feature.
Hey?
That's a great triple feature. For sure.
All right, so for mine, I went with the Stallone movie Cliffhanger.
Oh, love it. I was just talking to someone about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Cliffhanger.
For as cheesy as the movie is, it's beautifully filmed. All the outdoor cinematography is just great up in the mountains. It's a great-looking movie, except for that one scene where Stallone fights the guy in the cave, at which point we obviously move from all these great outdoor locations straight into the soundstage with the plastic-looking stalactites and stalagmites. Just so Stallone can fight that one guy.
And I think, there seems to be, I recall like another drastic change where he's getting chased by the corrupt treasury agent, and then it's shifted over to like a frozen pond, which seems very soundstagey as well.
Could be, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. And it's jarring. That stuff is jarring because, like you said, they're running around actual mountains there, you know?
Right.
What a great movie, Cliffhanger. Fantastic. All right. Well, that is it. What a great way to end on a cliffhanger. I much appreciate that.
Cliffhanger.
Ending on a cliffhanger.
Ending on a cliffhanger. So thank you to the assembled experts here at the Friday Filibuster. Friday Filibuster, DVDverdict.com is our email. Mac, why don't you take us away?
I have got to get me one of these.